Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And welcome back to Overnight America. One last hour. Late start because of the Blues, but a big win from the Blues. I'm excited. I have Thursday night off, and Brad Young will be filling in. Producer Mike and I will be going to the Blues game, with his favorite team being the Blues and my favorite team being the Red Wings. It was a natural fit. I love the people that have been texting in some ideas of how we could handle our little friendly wager, what the loser has to do on air to embarrass themselves. I haven't quite figured it out yet, but good to see Doug over in Chesterfield message in. He just celebrated a birthday. Happy birthday to you, Doug. Said he was listening in after coming home from his celebration, which is cool. Pastor Rick getting a message from him too. You can always message in 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And don't forget, too, if it's not the text line, you can always tweet at Ryan Recker. Twitter was all weird today. It was down. You couldn't get onto it. It made me wonder if, just like the Facebooks were going through this big problem, man, there's something going on in the background they're not admitting to, and it's probably something bad. I'm just going to guess all of your information's been stolen. Hey, you might as well just assume it at this point. And if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast at KMOX.com or get it on your favorite podcast app. If you do it on an app, just click that subscribe button. It always helps us out. There was a story on Fox 2, and you can also find it on KMOX.com. It's a story about a kindergartner's mother that wants to know why she's not allowed to see a letter written to her son. And as I was listening to the way this story played out, I think I caught the school in a pretty embarrassing moment. And I think I know why they're backpedaling. So let me, I'll get to that in a moment. I want to play this. And this is Fox 2's coverage of it, is where I first saw the coverage of it. But why in the world would you hide something from a parent of a child? I mean, that is not the right way to do things.
Brandy Rulin wants to know why the kindergarten teacher at Beasley Elementary read a letter to her son written by a classmate's parent, and she isn't allowed to see the letter.
Well, it's ridiculous. Anything that can be shown to a six-year-old can be shown to their parent.
Absolutely. She says the kindergarten teacher called her on February 20th saying another parent wrote a letter to her son regarding an incident with their daughter. The teacher read the note to her son. Brandy went to the school that day and asked to see the letter.
Immediately the answer was no.
Why did they tell you no?
They told me that it was a confidentiality concern and privacy concern.
Ooh. I believe this parent. I do. I really do. I understand that schools think they may be doing the right thing, but they don't think ahead of time when they get caught in doing the wrong thing, and then they double down on the wrong thing. So instead of doing the right thing, it's something like this. You know, there was a response from the Melville School District. And let me keep playing. I think it's part of this Fox 2 story.
Brandy Rulin tells me she has a right to see the letter. She doesn't believe it was malicious, but doesn't understand what the Melville School District is trying to hide. The district gave me this response. Due to confidentiality, we cannot share this type of communication with other parents. However, we told the concerned parent about the sentence that referenced her child. We thought this matter had been resolved. We welcome additional conversations with the parent.
All right, so that's an official statement given to Fox 2. So later they have conflicting points of truth. And this is where I think the school got caught in a lie. So here's where they can get in trouble. This is where at least I come to this conclusion. So part of the statement, it says, we are aware of a complaint from the parent you are referring to. This parent has requested to see communication between a different parent and the classroom teacher. Due to confidentiality, we cannot share this type of communication with the other parent. Now, up until that point, this makes sense. And then let me read the following portion of this sentence. However, we told the concerned parent about the sentence that referred to her child. The parent is requesting a copy of the letter, and we cannot provide that due to privacy laws. And I believe that this kid, even though he's young, and if you're talking about a six-year-old, they absolutely, absolutely would know the difference if a letter was read to them or not. I think when the six-year-old goes back and talks to the parent, there's no way for you to immediately dismiss this six-year-old and saying, oh, you made all of that up. How in the world would a six-year-old make that up? That's point number one. Point number two, if they're saying it's a confidentiality issue and they read either a portion of this letter or they read this letter to the six-year-old, they've already broke the confidentiality. So if the school's afraid that they're going to get in trouble for breaking the confidentiality of another parent, maybe that's why they're trying to cover this up. They feel the consequence of holding the letter away from the parent is a lot less than the consequence of breaking the confidentiality, which could probably get them in trouble. I think that's what's happening here. I think it's a cover-up, and I think the kid's telling the truth. I think this parent is right to question why this is happening, and I think the parent is right to be upset about this. I really do. Here's the rest of the story from Fox 2, because the school district in Melville, they actually changed their story.
Now, Rulon says the entire matter can be solved by letting her see the letter read to her son without her permission. She did say the superintendent reached out to discuss the issue with her as recent as last night. But Rulon wants everything to be in writing.
I think they know.
And this story is from a couple of days ago. So last night would be, you know, 3 or 4 days ago by now.
Know that they did something wrong. And that's why they're not showing it to me now. They're kind of digging in their heels and sticking to their guns.
You know, I tend to agree. Everything I've heard so far, and they have no reason to disbelieve the parent in something like this.
Now, Rulon posted the story on social media, and there were some moms that said they didn't know if a teacher could read a letter to a child written by another parent and not let that child's parents see the letter. Now, I did ask the district if that was normal, and then I just heard back about 10 minutes ago, and they said that the letter was never read to the six-year-old child. Rulon says that's a lie, so it's a he said, she said.
Yeah, I guess there's other six-year-olds in that classroom, but how in the world would a six-year-old make something like that up? I mean, are six-year-olds capable of putting together a plot that said, while in the classroom, so-and-so's mom wrote a letter, gave it to the teacher, and then that teacher read it to me? Are six-year-olds that sophisticated to be able to come up with this whole storyline? I mean, yeah, six-year-olds could lie, but would they be able to say, oh, another parent wrote a letter, then that teacher read that letter to me in class? And when the parent talks to their kid, I got to tell you, at six, normally it's pretty easy to tell if your kid's telling a fib or not. And plus, you know, if you have a good relationship with your kid, if they would be lying about something like that. And why would they lie? And why would they make up a story like that? None of that makes sense. None of it does. So I tend to believe that this kid's telling the truth. If she told the story or he, whatever, they don't say a boy or girl, whatever the kid is. But when they go and talk to their parent about this and the parent finds out about it, questions it, sounds like they were playing ball. At least the school district was trying to communicate with the parent at that point. Then they pulled this confidentiality deal, which it sounds like they admitted to breaking their own confidentiality. And then it goes on from there. Well, yeah, they did admit it. They admitted it because the district provided a response to Fox 2 that said they shared the portion of the letter that referred to her child. So wouldn't that be breaking confidentiality? See, I feel like they're trying to figure out the lesser of the two evils or the lesser of the two mistakes they made here and just trying to bet on that one at this point. No good. Coming up this hour, this is kind of interesting. We're going to talk to David Dillard. A lot of people are talking about college admissions. What's going to happen with the celebrities, Lori Loughlin and all of them, that were out there and bribing and paying people to take tests? And, you know, how deep is this going to go? Are they going to see jail time? What should happen to their kids? We're actually going to talk to a college prep expert a little bit later this hour. And a lot of people in Sweden are microchipping themselves. Why are they doing it? I don't know. I think you'd have to be crazy to microchip yourself for the convenience. I really do. We're going to talk about that too, and we'll keep the phone lines open in the last hour. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Would you ever get a microchip? Anyone listening right now, would you put a chip in your hand if it meant the convenience of you not carrying a key card or something? It's not like you're going to be able to just drop your wallet altogether. You're still going to have to keep identification on you. Would you do that? Would you say it might be fun to put this little tracker chip or whatever in my hand and I can use it as opposed to using a key card? Would you do that? I don't know. I don't see the appeal in it. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Recently, there was another story that posted up on the Business Insider About 3,000 Swedish people have inserted a microchip into their bodies because they believe this microchip will make their lives easier. So if you have a office setting where you need to swipe a key card in order to get in, normally there's these little electronic plates outside the door and you have a little key fob or whatever and you swipe it and you hear the beep and it makes it so you can open up the door and get in. Well, people don't like that. They think, oh, that's too inconvenient. I'd rather just get a surgical implant into my hand where there's a chip and then I can wave my hand over there. That's much less complicated. And then they also prefer to use it for other settings like the gym. You see those at gym settings or whatever. Is it really that much of an inconvenience to have the card? And plus, do you really want to have this thing lingering in your body, this little microchip? I don't see the appeal in it, but maybe you do. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. There's a picture of one of the people that put this in their body holding it up. It's about the size of a grain of rice. And apparently it's not that difficult. They just inject it right under the skin, kind of like if you're doing a microchip for the dog or something like that. Let me get to Tom in St. Louis. Hey, Tom, what's going on?
Oh, well, hello. How are you tonight, sir?
Good.
I sure appreciate you taking my call. Mm-hmm. Now, listen, I'm 100% serious about this. I'm not pranking you, but I would have a chip in me immediately, only if I could put it in my hind end and one of my my gluteus maximus cheek. Now, no, but think about it now. You know, when you go to the DMV to pay a ticket or something, let's see some ID, buddy.
I'll show you the ID. I don't know if it can be worked as identification. It's mostly used for like...
You know, and you go to the airport with those pesky guys that want to take your shoes off. They want to see an ID.
Yeah.
Well, hey, go and swipe this, my friend.
Well, there's no swipe. The ID you'll still have to carry around. I like the idea of having to pay for something. You're okay. You can say you have the digital wallet in this thing that is branded in your back end. Yeah.
Well, I would do it only as long as I could put in one of my behind cheeks there.
Yeah.
And that'd be I'd get a kick out of using it every time.
Good luck.
Sir, you have a nice evening.
Thanks, Tom. You too. Bye. That's funny. I wonder how tall you are. You'd have to be pretty a lot of times these key fob things are pretty high off the ground. I mean, you'd almost have to hop. So basically, if there's one of these little electronic key fob things around the wall, you go up to it, you turn around, you bend over slightly, and then you hop up and hope that it would match up with the little box on the wall. What a strange visual that is. Oh, Patrick calling in from D.C. Patrick, what's going on?
Well, only us in Washington, D.C. can figure out how to subvert these little chips that go into people. You know what I mean?
Mm. I would like to see politicians get one of these chips in. You'd see real quick they would ban them.
Yes, we would. As a matter of fact, you wouldn't want them requiring them to be put in your kid to go to school is one thing.
No, I don't want any of that. And I'm always afraid. You see those conspiracy theorists that say that's the next step. Every birth in America is going to have a child with a microchip in it afterwards or something like that.
No, I mean, you know, I like free kids and free spirit. I don't like any of that stuff. However, but, you know, as you see, as you were talking about the Swedish people and also throughout Europe, they work with the handicapped people who are unable to use their hands very well in wheelchairs, and it helps them to get into their houses because they have that little pad right there that kind of unlocks the door for them. They can go right on in. And there's certain little functions that they really don't have the use of their hands, but like they can raise their wrist and turn things on and off very easy.
No, interesting.
They can't reach. You know, the television and things like that. But then again, you know, there's always the ones who can go ahead and duplicate those little chips and, you know, grab one. They get someone who gets the chip, and then they, you know, take the chip out of that person and figure out a way to put a different chip in there to go out and subvert the system.
I think
you can quickly subvert the system just as fast as you can with smartphones, which really...
It sounds like this Mission Impossible stuff you're talking about, where they're swapping things out or whatever. They do say it's harder to hack one of these things because you have it biologically on you, but that's not impossible. You know, you can hack heart monitors or the, what are those things they put in, the pacemakers? You can hack those too. Yeah. So it's just because it's in your body doesn't mean it can't be hacked. One of the things you mentioned there about people with disabilities, that's interesting at the home, which makes me wonder why they don't have technology like that already. If we have the ability to hop into a car with actually without putting the key into the ignition and they can just start your car that way, I don't see why you couldn't do that for your home and for your front door, just having some kind of device on you that would help you get in and out.
Yes. And if it works in the hospital, perhaps it can measure blood pressure for some reason. If it's in the right spot, that lets somebody know that their blood pressure is going a little crazy. That might be a little cheaper than a lot of equipment that you can have hooked up to you. So there's medical advantages for anything. That's the good part about technology. There's medical advantages for anything. But then again, there is the evil parts of technology. And every time there's something good with technology, evil comes along, which is really sad.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It made me wonder, too, when you mentioned the disability side of it, I thought this is a way for businesses to get around their ADA compliances they need to have inside of their workplaces, because they feel like, oh, instead of actually spending all that money to put in the proper buttons or whatever it may be, we'll just make sure anyone with a disability is chipped and we'll get around it that way. That'd be a pretty lousy approach to it. That's what I thought you were going to go for at first when you're talking about the disability side.
How to get out of doing what you're supposed to do.
How to get out of being compliant, put it on the person with the disability. I can see some benefits to that sort of thing. I wonder how often that would be used. Like, even in Sweden, they say about 3,000 people have taken advantage of this. And in Wisconsin, there's actually a business that started to do this voluntarily. They say that today, a lot of people in the next 5 or 10 years, that's going to be something that a lot of companies are going to offer. There was a politician down in Alabama not that long ago. We did a story about how he was putting through legislation that would make it illegal for your company to force you to get one of these in order to work for them. So good for him to be proactive on something like that.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Because, you know, again, just start thinking if they're as small as rice, And you have all these chips, and they mass produce them, and they find a way to just make tons of them. Why don't you start getting them mixed up? You get the wrong chip put in you. You think you're going to go work do
all
something
of those,
right? You know?
Yeah, those movies. You see enough of those things where people implant something in, and they say, what was that one movie? They put something in, and they said, if you don't do what we tell you to do, we'll trigger it, and you'll die instantly, or something like that. There was like some. What was that movie?
I didn't see that one, but it reminds me of the dog with the electric fence. The dog learns, he gets that little shock in his collar. Ooh.
Yeah, I get it. And then on the same time, what if there was some sort of storyline in a Marvel superhero movie where it's in the future, everyone gets these chips, and then someone nefariously tries to use them as, hey, we're going to control everyone, or we're going to use it as a way to hurt people as opposed to help them. And
the evil empire would love this stuff.
I know. Who needs Terminator with, what's that, the big computer system they use on Terminator? Skynet? Hey, we're going to be wearing Skynet. That's the conspiracy. Maybe that could be the next Terminator plot line. We're all wearing Skynet.
Well, at least, you know, the nude beach might win out. You never know.
Yikes. Thanks, Patrick. Good to hear from you.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Bye. Yeah, says thousands of people in Sweden are embedding these microchips under their skin. Under the skin. It's an old song. Is that a Sinatra song? Sweden biohacking group started organizing implant parties. In other countries, in the U.S., the U.K., France, Germany, Mexico, you're starting to see some of those offering it. Yeah, the one I was talking about, Three Square Market, was a vending machine company in Wisconsin. It has 50 employees. And they had their own little implanting party where they inserted the microchips into their hands if they wanted to do that sort of thing. They could use it to buy snacks, log into computers, or use a photocopier. Wonderful. Just what I was worried. I need to get an implant to use a photocopier. If it wasn't the difficulty of using the photocopier to begin with, now I need to get an implant to do some of the most common things. That should scare you a little bit. What if, I don't know, but this catches on and they say, we're just going to drop credit cards, which is everyone get an implant. What if they the lobbyist of the implant lobbyist or whatever tries to get so powerful that this becomes the new norm and there's people like me that don't want to do it. There's got to be a lot of people like me that don't want any of this for them and their family. You know, I won't even take a DNA test. That's how much I'm against them trying to force things like that. What do you think? I'm going to put a chip in my body? You're out of your tree. And a lot of times, you know, I'm sure there's no power source in this, but I'm sure there's a way to, and I'm sure they'll find a way to use your natural whatever in your body to power something in the chip in the future. You never know. I just don't trust. I just don't think it's so inconvenient to carry around a key card that you would go out of your way to have a surgery to implant a chip under your skin. I don't get it. Well, the college prep scandal, we keep seeing news. Are they going to go to jail? Are they not going to go to jail? Are their kids going to get kicked out? How widespread is this in the world of college? David Dillard's going to join us next, president of KD College Prep on Overnight America KMOX. And joining us now is president of KD College Prep, David Dillard. Thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
You're welcome.
We were rocked by this celebrity scandal where we found out that some high-profile actors' children were there was a very interesting ring of paying people to take tests for their kids or paying off and bribing college officials in order to get their kids into these college universities. You're someone that's really big into college prep. You've been in the field for a long time. Was something like this surprising to you?
It was not really surprising, but I wasn't surprised that it happened. I was surprised with the level of sophistication. We've seen cheating scandals, frankly, in every level of society for a long time. I mean, it doesn't happen just in education. It happens in politics, in sports, in entertainment, in clergy. This is a case, though, of someone who understood the system well enough to understand where the weak spots were, where the areas that were not as well illuminated were, didn't get as much attention, and recognized the people that might be susceptible to these types of bribes. It was a very sophisticated plot. One ringleader, but it infected people and institutions across the country.
Yeah, and it did. I think people were also surprised by some of the high-profile names that were involved in this too. It wasn't just someone that was unknown, or you're like, oh, here's just someone that's a head of a corporation and has a lot of money so they can throw it around and flaunt it. There was some recognizable actors and actresses that were caught up into this as well. They were purposely doing this sort of thing. And some of them were beloved. We have a Full House mom that's in there. You know, that's a beloved type of television show, family friendly. So I think that caught a lot of people off guard too.
Well, they call them actors for a reason.
Yeah, it's true. But she's doing Hallmark and everything else like that.
That's right.
Well, how, in your experience where you've seen different interactions with college universities, did you ever get the hint that this sort of thing was going on in the background? Or was this just something that there was an upper echelon of type of person that was in that style of world that only knew about that?
No, I mean, we've had cheating scandals where it's come to light of people that have been sent in to take tests for other people. They had a scandal a few years ago in New York, and they tightened up the requirements at that time. They changed the rules so that you had to submit a photo. It had to come through your counselor's office. It really shut down a lot of the possibility of that type of thing. Testing organizations put a lot of attention on security lately. That doesn't mean that there aren't opportunities for cracks in the system. We also know that athletics in general is a place where there's opportunity for this type of thing to happen because it's such high-profile names, such high amounts of money on the line. And so, you know, we've seen this for years. So that is not unusual. What was unusual is the way they went about it, finding the sports that were not getting that much recognition, would not come under that much scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some good things that are coming out of this. I mean, as soon as this broke, I guarantee you there were high level meetings in every university around the country,
mm-hmm,
that were that were saying we've got to look at how we're doing things and whether we're susceptible to the same things.
Yeah.
And so I think that there will be changes that are coming in admissions, not by edict, but voluntarily, because nobody wants to be a part of this type of scandal.
Hmm.
The universities are on one level victims in this scenario because they've worked years to build the reputations for these great programs and the competitiveness they've had, but they are susceptible to this type of scrutiny because we all know of or all have heard of high profile people that buy their way in with large contributions.
Mm-hmm.
I think the universities it's fully within their discretion to make a place for somebody's grandson who just made a multi-million dollar contribution. But that's a development decision, not really an admission decision.
Yeah, that's interesting the way you put it that way. And joining us now, president of KD College Prep, David Dillard. And some people are saying, you know, it's funny because you talk about the contribution side. They'll say, you know, what's the big deal if a rich person uses their wealth? Because all they're thinking about is the well-being of their children. They want to give them the best experience they possibly can. You know, what's the big deal if they bribe a person to get them in? You know, it's in the grand scheme of things, what's one kid getting into a college that shouldn't have been there? So what do you say to those people that don't see this as a big deal?
Well, I think the bribes that were coming by underlings who were breaking policy rules of the school is a different issue than a school making a decision that they're going to let these people get in because of a development decision that we made.
Mm-hmm.
There were people who missed opportunity to go. There are people on those athletic teams. They had a certain number of slots available for those athletic department teams, and there were people that dropped out. If I'm I think it's short-sighted on the coach's part not to do your own checks and balances because you're going to be responsible for the production of that team.
Yeah, and I guess that's true.
If you don't have a full complement of quality people, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. So I think it was a little short-sighted in that regard. But these are the types of checks and balances that I think can easily be shored up and corrected in the future.
What do you think should happen to the kids that are already going through these classes or have already been admitted into the colleges?
Yeah, that's a tough one. They're saying not all the kids didn't know. I think it'd be really hard for most of the kids not to know that something was going on unusual. Especially if they knew that they didn't have the capability to make the scores on tests that were submitted, and in those cases, I don't think that they should be there. But I think there may be some cases where the kids really didn't know, and I think that's going to be a much tougher call for the universities.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So let's say the kids didn't have the scores. They complete ignorant. I think that would be a pretty good defense for them, and they would say,
yeah,
you know, I didn't know any better. I was making it along life pretty well, and how was I supposed to know? But I'm sure there had to have been some kids that would have known. I think some of the colleges have come at it with the approach of re-looking at their application. If they lied directly on their application, then that's grounds for them to say you're going to have to go study somewhere else. Outside of that, I don't think they want to or can maybe kick them out of college. I don't know.
Actually, when you complete an application, you have to sign off that all the information is correct and valid, and you're open to scrutiny beyond that point. I've known of kids that had just admission offers rescinded because of irregularities in the information that they provided. So there's definitely grounds for that. The real question for the parents in this case, I'm not sure what they were expecting to accomplish by buying their way in for their kids if the kids can't perform when they get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because ultimately, these lawnmower parents that were mowing down everything in front of their children were not doing their kids any service because eventually they have to be able to perform on their own somewhere in life.
it would come
back to haunt them.
Yeah, it'd be like lying on an application to get a construction job, and then the foreman says, "Can you frame that door?" And you say, "I don't know how to do it." Then what happens? Yeah. It would be like something like that. And it's true. I think a lot of times the habits of yourself in high school, they don't automatically change overnight if you don't have the drive to take it to the next level. So obviously, if the drive wasn't there to begin with, or maybe the motivation wasn't there, I don't know what's going to have them flip a switch automatically and become model students to make it to some of these top universities. And what about the universities themselves? How are they going to be able to control their image after a scandal like this that have made them look terrible based on some of the people that were maybe accepting bribes and they had no idea what was going on?
Well, they obviously are taking a hit because this is receiving so much light. But I mean, it was not very long ago that USC went through a major scandal with their athletic department and had scholarships taken away. Mm-hmm. I guess that has become so routine it's not thought of as a slap at the institution, just maybe the athletics department. But there's been no shortage of other athletes that wanted to go there. So I don't know that it will hurt them long term. I think the thing that I am most sad about are the kids who really wanted to go to some of these very competitive institutions that may not even try now because they think that there's no chance for them.
Interesting.
And to those people, I would say the environment is perfect for you to try at this point because there will be more scrutiny on the quality of the candidates coming in than ever before. And so you've got a clearer path for a quality student now than we have in recent years.
All right, so let's say, you know, you're with KD College Prep president there and our guest David Dillard. Let's say a family sits down with you, you review their test scores, how they did on the ACT, the SAT, and they say, I want to get into USC or I want to get into Yale. Or they bring this and you look at it and it's just not a strong enough case to apply and realistically get in there. How do you break the news to them or what do you say to them at that point when their expectation is so high, but you know it's going to be very difficult or impossible for them to get into a school like that?
Well, we would show them the facts. We would show them what it has taken to get into that school recently, the type of GPA, the type of rigor from your class, from your high school course selection, the type of test scores, the type of activities, volunteer efforts, leadership that they have been expecting out of their typical student, and show them the percentage of students at their level that get in.
Mm-hmm.
And say, you know, if you want to take a flyer at it, go ahead. But really what we need to do is find the best fit for you.
Right.
And we would give them a survey of their hopes and goals and ambitions for college and beyond. We would do the same thing for the parent and make sure that the parent and the student were on the same page and work through the negotiation to get them on the same page. Because ultimately that has to happen before a student applies to college. And then build a balanced list. It's okay to have some reach schools on the list, but there needs to be a balance between reach and match, and there need to be some likely schools on that list so that the student has a chance to know that they've got a backup. And frankly, a likely school is not a bad choice for a student. Those are the schools that might be more willing to offer merit-based scholarship money. Mm-hmm. Honors programs, that's a sweet life in college.
Oh, yeah.
And so by the time you have done that, the student may have some rejections, but they're going to have a lot of acceptances and some offers they didn't expect. And they will end up having choices amongst a group of colleges that, frankly, all could be a great experience for them. There's not one good school out there. Mm-hmm. There are bunches, and depending on how you're wired and what environment it would take for you to blossom, that can be, it's probably a school you've never thought of.
Yeah, interesting. That's where you kind of get that expert advice and someone that's familiar with the landscape of the colleges and what each college has to offer. And that's where I think like a college prep could come in. This is where you and your wife, you co-founded KD College Prep in 1992. You're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, is that right?
We're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, but we actually do college counseling with students all across the country.
Oh, cool. How can people find you?
At kdcollegeprep.com.
kdcollegeprep.com, and people could go to the website and, you know, families or parents too, if they have questions, and you know,
be glad to answer those questions.
Finding the right fits, not bribing someone to force your kid into a place that ultimately is going to be probably a failure for them. I mean, we got to be honest. So we got to be careful for these things. We want what's best for our kid. Sometimes finding the right fit for your kid. You got to be strong with your kid. You got to know how to say no to, hey, I know you want to go to USC, but hey, you know sometimes what's best for them if it's not going to work for them, as opposed to spending $500,000 to bribe someone to get in somewhere. So kdcollegeprep.com is the website. President David Dillard, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
He joins us on the GL International Realty Guest Line. How about that? It's Overnight America, KMOX. Yesterday, I had a great conversation with Mr. McFeely, the character he played on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. David Newell's his name. All those decades as a children's entertainer. Man, still involved with the Fred Rogers Foundation. He's going to be involved as well with the upcoming movie on Mr. Rogers. That's November 22nd, I think. Tom Hanks is going to be playing that one, a major motion picture. And the cool thing he said during that interview was not only was he on set, they recorded it in the original PBS studio that Fred Rogers did his show on all those years. How cool is that? The same original studio. If you missed that conversation, go to KMOX.com/overnight, and you can also get it on your favorite podcast app. Just search for Overnight America. And if you're on an app, click the subscribe button, a great way to support the show. I was going to do this, and I only had a minute to do this in the first hour, but I wanted to play this again because I thought it was so good. What Ted Koppel decided to talk about, the legendary newsman, Ted Koppel, who was on ABC for all those years, ABC Nightline, had a distinct style to him. Ted Koppel had a very distinct style to him, and he did everything he could to hide any emotion possible, because it may be possible he's never had an emotion in his life. It's just one of those type of people. But it's a whole different style of journalism that we're seeing today than it was back then. And he points that out as he says that the Trump's perception that the establishment press is out to get him is not mistaken. He looks at it as someone that was in the business. He knows the business is changing, and he realizes that because of the changes in the way that journalism has laid itself out, it also changes the way in how they report. And I don't see him wrong here. I think he's right on.
We have things appearing on the front page of the New York Times right now that never would have appeared 50 years ago. Analysis, commentary on the front page.
Commentary on the front page. You know, that's a good point.
I remember sitting at the breakfast table with my wife during the campaign after the Access Hollywood tape came out, and the New York Times, and I will not offend any of you here by using the language, but you know exactly what words we used, and they were spelled out on the front page of the New York Times. I turned to my wife and I said, the Times is absolutely committed to making sure that this guy does not get elected.
Yeah, and it's a real fascinating point he's making here. He said you wouldn't have expected that from them a couple of decades ago, but this is where we are today. I think that the term fake news upsets a lot of people, but it is true that the people that are writing and contributing to the news, as they say they are journalists, are using some sort of bias that are influencing their work. There's a couple of ways you can prove this sort of ordeal. Look at the major news networks and look at the major news print publications. Do those journalists have a difficult time reporting on something that they don't like to report on? Let's say they have some sort of personal hate towards Donald Trump, and they'll do everything they can to write up the stories that they see as proof for their own biases. If something comes out that would disprove their own bias, are they also doing their due diligence as a journalist to write up those stories, or are they ignoring them? Or do they find a way to spin them in a way that would help either lessen the blow for their own cause? And I see you see that over and over and over and over in the national media, over and over. I don't think you can deny that there is an issue with it. And Ted Koppel was part of a group. He was on stage and he was sitting next to an author, Marvin Kelb, on this very topic. And Marvin had a comeback for Ted. And listen how they interacted here.
We are not the reservoir of objectivity that I think we were.
I think was better than you were describing.
All right.
I think so. And as a matter of fact, a great deal of the reason why the press is writing all of these negative stories about Trump is that he deserves it. He deserves it in the sense that he has committed a whole series of actions before he was president and now that are first now beginning to be investigated in a very serious way.
It is the job of the press
to cover those investigations.
But that is your opinion.
That's a fact.
Hello,
there are investigations.
There are folks out there, Marvin, who disagree with you.
Yeah, and let me just point out, I'm going to play a little bit more. We only have a minute left, but let me just point out, how many times have you seen a story come out that has been later disproven, but they don't put a correction in? They just, it's reported. There could be one anonymous source, but you know, we're going to put it on our front page. How often does that happen? It's frequent.
And but they're making up the stuff?
Well, there are folks out there who would disagree with the perception that the press is still being objective.
Yeah. I would totally, totally tell you that the press is not objective. As a whole, in the national media, you've found that something that works for you and you're just wanting to keep your job, it doesn't matter what the truth is. It matters what you want in the message you're presenting. And that is not true journalism. That does it. We'll be back again tomorrow night. Big night. We'll see you.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.